Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hello!
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. Wow, what an episode we have for you all today. We are joined by the lovely Sherilyn Vera. She is a filmmaker, a documentarian, a podcaster, and just an overall lovely person to talk to.
Yes, has a great voice. We learn a lot about her and I, you know, we enjoy the conversation. You can tell it's easy, it's breezy, it's Cookie Monster-y.
Yeah, we do talk about Cookie Monster and we talk about being raised in Florida, her experiences in Puerto Rico, and our memories of our own homelands and what brought her to LA. It's a very interesting and funny story of that commute all the way to LA. Yeah, it's great and very inspiring. Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pets? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Shireen.
Wow, how are you doing this? I honestly, this is my favorite kind of weather. It's like overcast and cloudy, kind of drizzly. I'm obsessed with this time, so I'm feeling good.
I used to really like it, and now that I have to like walk my dog 3 times a day, right. It's gotten so hectic in the sense like he's just like a white, floofy dog that takes everything with him. So every time he comes back in after a walk in the rain, he's just like so muddy and gross, and I have to give him a bath every time, which is not great. Or like a half bath, just the bottom part of his body.
Right. Would you ever consider getting him those like feet things?
Or
like,
I have, paw and I did things? Buy some once, and I put them on him, and he just was like, "What the fuck?" And I was like, "You're right. This is ridiculous. You look silly." And he was like, "No, thank you." And I was like, "I trust your judgment." So yeah, no, he doesn't wear those. He has a little raincoat.
That's cute.
I did my research to find a good dog raincoat for him. I mean, yesterday we got caught in a hailstorm when we were outside.
Yeah.
It went from no rain, nothing, it was clearing up, to full-on hail, the two of us just outside, like, okay.
Yeah. I didn't consider how much you having a dog definitely changes your opinion of, like, rain and weather and stuff like that. But me, not having a dog, I'm loving it. I am sorry to hear that.
That was McDonald's.
Wait, I told someone the other day how good you are at your Mickey voice. It's, like, scary good. I don't know why it was brought up, but I tried to bring you up the other day.
It's scary good, man. You don't understand.
Give us a taste.
Okay, I got to kind of get into it. It takes me a second to get it right. Okay, all right. Hold on. I need to, I'll do the classic bit, which is from my Bachelor podcast, which is that if they're going to have any bisexuals on the show, it can only be hot blondes.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, all right, guys. Hot blondes only. You know the deal. We can't have anyone kissing and definitely no men. All right, Mickey. Just as if
the bit is
that Mickey is like obviously an executive at ABC, Disney, whatever, Warner, whatever the fuck. And so there was a season of Bachelor in Paradise where they had a woman bring her girlfriend on. And we were like, the only way they would let this happen is because they're too hot blondes.
And you did tell me this back when it happened. But regardless...
Sorry, hot blondes only. We can only have blondes kissing, nothing else.
Yeah, your Mickey voice truly.
And now that they have their first Black Bachelor and they are fumbling left and right.
I mean,
it's bad.
I've heard bad things about it. As you know, Anna watches The Bachelor and reality TV. I don't. So a lot of my info comes from you, to be honest.
This season, they fucked. Mickey's like, all right, come on. What's the big deal with an old South party, okay? The Confederate was only a few years back. Why is everyone so upset?
Okay, that time I wasn't looking at you and it was Mickey Mouse. You know what I mean?
It was like, Mickey there's Mouse.
No. Anyways.
All right. Bye, Shireen. So stupid.
I've also like I was never like a huge Mickey fan. Like obviously our family loved Disney, but Mickey like low-key kind of creeped me out.
Why?
I don't, because maybe it was the voice.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're an Arab, right? Doesn't it seem like he would say something? Mickey seems so racist.
He really is. Maybe that was what I was detecting.
Hey, come on. I'm not racist. I don't see color. I'm sorry. This
we need
is
to make
stupid.
An entire podcast.
We need to bring the poor guest in so they don't have to listen to this.
Interviewing Mickey.
Yeah. Just Mickey saying really problematic shit. I don't understand. I support the thin blue line. Oh, no, what is it about the thin blue line? That's a documentary by Aaron Morris.
No, the thin red line is, and the thin, yeah, you're right.
The thin blue line is the police thing, right?
Yes.
Supporting, yeah, okay. Yeah, Mickey's like, this all lives matter.
Yo, no.
Sorry, Mickey's racist. He's from a different
era. He's a problematic mouse.
Yeah.
But anyways.
We got to bring the guest in. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, let's bring in the guest. This has been a long tangent, but I'm really excited about our guest today. We actually have never met in person, but I realized she was following me one day on the socials, and I was like, oh, this person is really cool. So I followed her back. We've kind of just been like internet stalking each other. Actually, maybe that's one-sided, but I've kind of been doing that ever since. And our guest today, without further ado, is Sherilyn Vera.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for bringing me onto this special Disney-themed episode.
That was really unplanned. I never really know where the intro conversation is going
to go. You guys planned it because I'm from Florida, didn't you?
Oh. No, I don't know anything about you.
Yeah.
Well.
And also I have been internet stalking you back, so it's mutual. I reached out to you first.
But that was after I was already following you, right? Like,
yeah.
I didn't realize how long you had been following me. And I remember seeing Lacey post about like her research assistant every once in a while. And then I made the connection. I was like, oh, it's the same person. And yeah, you seemed really cool.
Cool. Likewise.
Well, but as I said, we haven't met in person. We don't really know each other, but having you on a podcast is the perfect opportunity for everyone to get to know you, including me.
Oh yeah.
I guess we can just start at, you already said you were from Florida. So were you born there? Did you grow up there?
Yeah, I was born in the exotic Orlando, Florida.
Ooh.
Yeah, so Florida's where Puerto Ricans go usually, and Florida and New York. My parents met in Florida. They both grew up in Puerto Rico, and yeah, so that's where I was born.
What was it like growing up there?
It was chill, I guess. My parents were great. We had a house. We were doing the American dream thing. I was going to school. Yeah, it was fine. It was nice to be around nature and stuff, but I did get out of Florida as soon as I possibly could.
How old were you when you got out?
I was 20. I got a job at California Pizza Kitchen in Orlando, and then I was like, this is my way out. And then I transferred to a California Pizza Kitchen in California.
Whoa.
And
you can do that, like across the nation, transferring to a different store?
I made it happen. I was like, you guys have connections, right? And I just remember the managers being like, I mean, I guess I could email this manager asking them. And I was like, okay, they have an opening in Pasadena. Sure, I'll take it. I'll be there soon.
Wow. What did your parents think about that move?
I guess I'd been talking about leaving Florida for so long. Like, they've known that I wanted to work in like the entertainment industry since I was young. Like, I grew up doing like theater and putting on shows and always messing with cameras and stuff. And I was always like, all right, I'm gonna go to California. And they were like, oh, so you're really gonna go? And yeah, I left. And my mom is constantly talks about how like she was not prepared emotionally for me to go. But yeah, they're super supportive. They wish I was a little closer, but overall they're very supportive of my dreams and getting out of Florida.
That's nice. I'm glad.
What brought your parents to Florida?
I don't know. So I think about anyone that leaves Puerto Rico, and it's like some of them are just leaving because there's no jobs in Puerto Rico, or I think that they really just wanted a slightly more comfortable life. So, you know, Puerto Rico is great and fantastic, but sometimes like the system is just really slow. And even before the hurricane, things like the water and power and stuff can be tricky. And I truly think that they just wanted like a house
Yeah.
With the electricity and reliable mm-hmm. plumbing and carved pavement and nice roads and no potholes, and like a little more money. So mm-hmm. yeah, they left when they were in their 20s and they met working at a Hilton.
Oh. I imagine the hotel scene in, especially Orlando, is like very
poppin'.
Yeah. Well, that's romantic. I like that. Did you grow up visiting Puerto Rico at all? Or were your parents like, once we're here, we're not going back?
We're out of here. No, I actually did. Luckily, I spent, like, my first language was Spanish, even though I grew up in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't learn English until I was, like, in school, elementary school. And then, yeah. like, slowly the Spanish started fading away. And, you know, I still speak Spanish, but I've got, like, a weird accent. But, yeah, we spoke Spanish in the house a lot. And I would visit Puerto Rico for like a month at a time during mm-hmm. the summers. And
same, or for, you know, not Puerto Rico, but Syria.
That'd be cool if you went to Puerto yeah. Rico, your family's just like, yeah, check it same. Out. Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, how do you feel about being able to have visited Syria when you were younger? Like
those memories and moments for me, and I'm sure Anna can probably relate with to Iran as well, but they are so precious to me and like so important. And they're like some of the most like sacred memories in my brain. And especially since we obviously haven't, well, maybe it's not obvious, but my family hasn't been able to go back since 2011. The last time we went was the summer of 2010. And then in 2011, damn. The uprising started. It got really dangerous. It was always a police state, but now it's more than ever a police state. So that really breaks my heart, and it makes me really sad to think about those memories, like just having no choice but to fade away because it's been almost 11 years now.
Yeah.
But no, the growing up, and same with you, my first language was Arabic, and I learned English with my mom teaching me and my sister Hooked on Phonics. That little, there was like a game called Hooked yeah. on Phonics.
Oh, I remember the commercials.
Yeah. And I remember teachers wanting to put me and my sister into ESL classes because we had accents. And my mom was like, they know English. They just sound like me because I teach them English.
Yeah.
You know, and but aww. Yeah, going to Syria was and still is like I want to go back as soon as I can. But at this point, my whole family is scattered everywhere. A lot of them aren't in Syria anymore. And the ones that are not doing so hot. And it's just sad to know that like the Syria that's in my memories is not the Syria that's there. And so that's why I'm really grateful that I got to visit it when I did all those years, ever since I was a kid.
Yeah, I think that's why, like, I came across one of your posts about some footage that you mm-hmm. had filmed in Syria. And that's like later I messaged you about that because I was like, damn, that's relatable, even though Puerto Rican politics and Syrian politics are very different. A lot of my family has left Puerto Rico. Like almost mm-hmm. all of my family has left Puerto Rico. And like now my grandma is like one of the only people there. And when she passes away in many, many, many years, they're probably going to sell the house there. And I was yeah. so upset. I was like, damn, I'm really not going to have any connection to Puerto Rico anymore unless I buy property there. But yeah. I definitely yeah. hold those memories very close to me. And it's such a fun, you know, it's an island and a beach and mountains and mm-hmm. farms and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same about Iran. Like, my uncle died a few years ago and he was, like, the patriarch of the family. And, like, they were, like, last time I was talking to my family, they were like, yeah, we're probably going to sell this demolish this land and build condos, like really nice condos. And I was like, what the fuck? You guys want to like destroy uncle's house? Like, it's like a huge, like a really, it's the house we all gathered at, you know, mm-hmm. like it was just, I mean, I don't know if they've done it yet because I haven't gone in 4 years because of a certain president. But God, I really want to go back. I think about it all the time. And I, you know, soon I will. I get scared. I didn't go back once during the last time I went back, Trump had just been elected. Then I didn't go back to Iran since because of how shaky mm-hmm. things have been.
Yeah.
But hopefully yeah. I get to go back and hopefully they have not turned my uncle's house into condos yet.
That's so funny that like, especially as children, like me, especially like the houses that I would visit in Syria, my grandparents' house, my uncle's houses, like those are places I loved. And to them, they're maybe just... Maybe we've romanticized them, you know?
I think we do, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're so, like, look, the plumbing is unreliable. And the power occasionally goes out. Fun.
Right. But for them, I mean, especially in Syria now, the government's controlling how much water and power the citizens get. So the things that I romanticize are like a living nightmare for the people in Syria. So I hope all of us get to go back to our respective homelands sometime in the near future. Obviously, when traveling is physically possible. But yeah, I refuse to let our memories die before we do, if that makes sense. I know that's dramatic, but I'm like someone that's like very consumed with memory and dreams, and I don't want them to go away. And
wait, so dreams too?
I'm obsessed with dreams.
Oh my God, obsessed. Me too. I always wake up and I'll send my friend who lives downstairs and like is my filmmaking partner, I'll send her like a really long voice text. I'm like, hey, I just woke up. I had a really crazy dream that I'll just go. Yeah. And I like write them down all the time. And
I've never done the voice thing. I always write them down either in a notebook or on my phone if I'm too lazy to grab my notebook. But the voice memo might be more interesting because you're just like kind of talking unfiltered. And then I can just transcribe it if I want to. But yeah, I'm obsessed with dreams. I'm a huge fan of Jung for that reason, Carl Jung. And so much of my work is inspired by like dreams or memories. And they're so intertwined for me because dreams are kind of influenced by your memories a lot of the times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad to know that my fascination with dreams is shared with you.
Dreams and memories. Yeah. I mean, that's obsessed to the point where I literally had to make a documentary about it. And I'm obsessed with documentaries because I'm like, now is the only time we have to capture this moment in history and the uprising and all the people in Puerto Rico. Like, I'm obsessed with making sure that things are recorded, or things that I am obsessed with and interested in are recorded.
Yeah, same. Talk to us about the documentary.
So before the hurricane happened in 2017, I started making this documentary because I hadn't been to Puerto Rico in so long. And I was like, I don't even have any Puerto Rican friends that are my age. Like, all my friends are my cousins, and which is great. Love my cousins. But I want to meet people that are like me, like progressive, open-minded people. Like, I want to know what these Puerto Ricans are doing. And I want to reconnect with the island and with like my culture. Because growing up in Florida, I was not super connected with my Puerto Rican culture. I was assimilating and surviving in this public school system. And then when I moved to California, I was like, oh, shit. And also, I became an adult. I was like, oh, wow, people are actually really proud of being Latino or whatever their background is. And so I started working on the documentary before the hurricane. And then the hurricane happened. And I was like, oh, shit, I guess I gotta switch gears a bit because this has literally changed everything. And so I ended up starting an Indiegogo, getting a little bit of funding, making it to the island. I stayed there for 2 months so that I can like reconnect with people and like actually know what I'm doing and navigating this space that I'm kind of unfamiliar with as an adult, and researching. And I met people online, as I do, that I literally found in articles. I like found these photos of protesters and I was like, all right, what's their Instagram? Who are they? Let me ask them questions. Let me reach out. So I stayed in San Juan when I first got there. I basically spent a month just like, I met this guy named Fernando, and he and I became really good friends. And he's like this photographer, artist, mountain man guy. And he's like, let me show you the island. And so we literally went from like mountains in the middle of nowhere to like the most beautiful beaches. And he just kind of helped me like reconnect with the island. And then that's when I met like the subject of the documentary, who is this bar manager for a really popular bar in San Juan. The story is basically about this bar post-hurricane during a dry law, during a curfew, and just like helping the community kind of rebuild some of the island back. I mean, it's only 8 minutes long, but that's kind of the gist of it. And I did that, and I'm hoping it's like an ongoing project of just continuing to make these short documentaries about what's going on in Puerto Rico.
I mean, I think that's necessary. I feel like we have like the basic news version of what went down, which is like Trump's not helping them. There's just like no real other info other than like they're struggling and Trump won't help them. Like that's like all we ever really got. It's like we need more like humanizing stories of what's going on out there, especially in the mainstream media who does not give a fuck.
They don't give a fuck at all.
They really don't. Well, we want to talk to you more about your current career. And also, we didn't even ask you like before. Like, there's just so many, there's too many gaps for us. We're going to get all into it. But first, we'll take a quick commercial break. And we are back with Sherilyn Vera.
Hi again.
Hello. So you talked about making this documentary back in 2017, but you had started before. Mm-hmm. Did you study filmmaking or like what? So you mentioned you liked you knew you wanted to be in the entertainment industry. And I don't believe that you need to go to film school. I didn't go to film school.
Neither did I. Yeah. I'm so proud of it, even though I got a degree in communication, which is like.
No, same here. Same here. I have a communication and film double major, but the film degree was very theory based. I never had access to cameras in college. But how did you find the tools you needed to even make documentaries? And how did you come to, I'm largely self-taught. Is that the same for you?
Pretty much, yeah. I'm pretty much self-taught, majored in communication. I actually finished school out here. I started school in Florida and I was like, I got to get out of here still. So I transferred to Cal State LA, finished my degree in communication, left to Nashville for a couple months for an internship that was not good. And then while I was in Nashville, I got a call from someone, a friend of a friend at College Humor. And they're like, oh, we're looking for interns. Are you available? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm available right now. And they're like, can you start on Monday? I was like, oh, yeah, of course. And I literally drove across the country. started my internship at College Humor. And that's awesome. Where I first became acquainted with a bunch of camera equipment and just the ins and outs of production. Yeah, that's where I got my start. And then from there, I just kept freelancing in film. And I worked on Adam Ruins Everything as an office PA, other mostly comedy things because I love comedy as well. And I don't know if I have a specific thing that I want to stay. I don't have a lane that I want to stay in. I definitely want to do a little bit of everything. But yeah, that's kind of how I got the start.
That's amazing. I like that you were just you accepted it and you were like, get in your car immediately. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. See you Monday. That's pretty cool.
Actually, I needed an extra day. I was like, is it okay if I start on Tuesday? I literally had to pack everything and drive across the country. My dad was like, okay, I guess I'll fly up to Nashville and drive with you across the country because that's dangerous.
Yeah.
And nice. And then I started on Tuesday, actually.
That's what you want. Still impressive. You want your parents to have your back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So were your parents always encouraging of everything you wanted to do, film wise, or did they ever try and guide you in a different direction?
They were always you want to be a doctor, right? I was little, they're like, you want to be a doctor or something in the medical field, right? And I was like, yeah, okay. No, saying yes for whatever reason. But it was so obvious that I was not, I had ADHD and I'm very spacey. And I would always sing and dance and put on shows. And my mom is actually, she was mostly a stay-at-home mom, but she's a painter. And she would paint murals and she's a really eccentric person. and she would tell me oh yeah, you can actually do anything you put your mind to. And my dad is an IT guy. He started at the Hilton restaurant, but then he worked his way up to Time Warner Cable. Nice. And then he kept working in IT and security and stuff. So, they were just do well, be happy, do as well as you can and work really hard. They definitely instilled the kind of immigrant, just work as hard as you can all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We talked about this supportive. A lot. That's amazing that they were supportive, but we talk about the work ethic that our parents instilled in us a lot, whether they liked it or not. We just kind of were sponges to it. And yeah, I think it explains why so many of us children of immigrants just need to hustle. Mm-hmm. There's no other way of operating.
Yeah, we gotta hustle. Also because we literally have to.
Yeah, exactly.
Or else no one will pay attention.
for something that's your that was your first taste of production, a College Humor internship is amazing because you probably made so many connections in the comedy world. You got to meet certain people, and I'm so grateful that that was like the introduction to your production knowledge.
I guess I should mention, like, I had plenty of shitty kind of production jobs like before that. Like, I was a stand-in on a Lifetime film and like just other really thing, like sketchy things that I found on like Craigslist and
naturally.
But College Humor was like the first production job. Yeah.
That you actually like found joy in.
No.
No, never mind.
I'm just kidding. Well, kind of. I mean, I found joy in the opportunities that I knew were coming and like being in comedy, but like I don't think they had their internship program together at that point. And I
Wait, can I ask, was it a paid internship?
It was, yeah.
Okay, that's that puts
and nobody hurt me, but physically. but I did, I was the only intern working there at the time. And I just remember being so stressed out at the end of that internship that I literally was like, I'm going on a vacation. I just have memories of like loading and unloading a van so many times with like so many, like 25 C-stands by myself and just like loading and unloading a van. And I'm like a small person, but I would never let them know that I was struggling to. I was like, oh yeah, I got this, this cart of 30 C-stands. I can lift this. And then like cry on my commute, my hour commute home.
Yeah. Wow. That's brutal.
Yeah, but it was good. It led to so many good things.
But I mean, that's like kind of where we learn our hustle even more. Of like, oh, I did that. You know?
Yeah. And now I'm like shocked anytime I'm working with something that has an actual budget. I'm like, oh my God, our budget's more than $150? That's crazy. We could do anything.
Yeah. I'm the same. I've operated on such a low to no budget mentality for so long that sometimes when I think about it, I don't even know what I would do with a budget. Like I don't know. I mean, I still want one, to be honest. Don't
me too.
Yeah,
don't tell people.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. Like, you almost were like a PA in that case, right? Because I PA'd for so long doing the most miserable things, and I need to pay rent, you know. I need to pay rent, and I can relate a little bit. But okay, so you're in LA, you finish your internship, you start to PA on other things. As you're on sets and stuff, are you kind of morphing your idea of what you want to do with your art at that time? Or were you still kind of like letting yourself unfold naturally, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I definitely like working on Adam Ruins Everything. I was the office PA, but I knew that I liked documentary at that point. And I saw how they were like navigating that like research and comedy aspect of things. Mm-hmm. And I was definitely taking notes. Like everywhere I go, I'm like taking notes of how they do things. So that definitely influenced. I mean, I was like making YouTube. I made an embarrassing amount of YouTube videos that are now all private for the most part. So yeah, I guess I would take a little bit from gigs.
And you said that you always like comedy.
Yeah, definitely always like comedy. So College Humor was a good gig for that. I mean, and Adam Ruins Everything. I'm trying to think of like where that even came from, but I guess I don't know. My family's kind of crazy, so
yeah,
comedy was just normal.
Yeah.
And I was like the clown of the family. I really like absurd comedy. Like that's something that I'm...
Oh, I do too.
Really into, yeah.
Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. Did you watch that?
No. What's that?
It's this new
Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo movie.
Oh, yeah. No, I haven't seen that.
I feel like you might like it if you like the absurd stuff. It's so random and so refreshing.
It's like a Groundling sketch come to life, which I think it probably is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really refreshing. I mean, it is $20, but you can torrent it if you want to.
I mean, at this point, I've been paying for things because I'm like, well, what else is there to do? Yeah. And I love watching movies anyways. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not above torrenting something. I know this is a recorded podcast, but I don't care.
I mean, it's 2021. Hey, look, hey, would you steal a car, Shireen?
If I was desperate enough, I'm not going to roll it out.
Do you remember those were the ads? The like anti-torrent or whatever, anti-pirating. Right. Oh, they'd be like, yeah, you wouldn't steal a car, you would just you? Confess. And it's like, yeah, I would.
Yeah. Like, I just said that car, right now. I'd steal it.
If I really needed to.
Yeah, exactly. How did you get involved with Lacey Mosley and like researching for Scam Goddess?
Actually, Lacey will not remember this, but I met Lacey at UCB. I met her during like a diversity sketch thing. So I was taking sketch writing and just improv at UCB. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why I moved to California in the first place. I was like, I want to do UCB. Mm-hmm. That's where all the SNL people went. And I met Lacey there and she was like teaching some class. And then she doesn't remember that. I remember that. And then later on, I was working on, remember when those trivia app games were really hot?
Yeah.
So College Humor was producing one of those and I was working on one of those. And I say working with air quotes because it was the chillest job because they were live streaming only for a couple of hours a day. And so I got paid like a full 12-hour day. This is literally when I made my documentary. I made it while I was working on that show. And they brought in Lacey to audition to be the host. Lacey got it. So I spent some time working with her. And then later I saw that she put up a post about like needing a researcher for something. Didn't know what it was. I reached out to her and she like immediately took the post down and was like, you got it.
Nice.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
When once you figured out it was for Scam Goddess or like a podcast about scams, was that ever something you thought you would ever research?
No, definitely not. But I knew that I like I'm such an internet person. Like I'm all up on the internet, have been since I was a kid because my dad worked in IT. So I always had like computers and tech and gadgets around. And I'm like pretty good at navigating the internet and finding weird articles and just I'm pretty good at it. So I had no idea that I would be doing that. But I was like, you know what? This is a great opportunity to work in comedy, to up my research skills and just to get out there. And yeah, that's how I got into it. And now I'm like, it's cool because we'll get like a topic and basically I'll find a bunch of different sources and then I'll have to like structure it into like a story, essentially.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a good show. Yeah, great show. And Lacey's a great host and great research.
Because something like that does require facts and research about certain things and making sure you get it right and also making it like an entertaining, compelling story to follow along with. I mean, Lacey's a great host and a great personality, so I feel like she could be saying anything and she would make me laugh. But yeah, I think Scam Goddess is a very unique podcast as far as like being hilarious but also like presenting you with real things that are happening. Like it's just, yeah. So I give you kudos for making such a cool show.
Thanks. Appreciate it. And yeah, Lacey's a great host.
Yeah, she is. Former guest. Go listen to her episode if you don't need more praise than that, because that is, she's worth checking out. I want to ask a little about your podcast. Tell us about that show. When did you start it? Why did you start it? Is the co-host of the show your partner in filmmaking who lives underneath you or wherever? Or is this a different person?
This is a different filmmaking partner, but so Hannah K. Baker, she's my co-host. Yeah. She did help me with the Boricua documentary. She's a film school kid. Mm-hmm. She's got like all this weird film school knowledge. And yeah, so it's a show about movies and the meaning we give them. It's kind of like we'll talk about a movie, but we'll really talk about the social impact of that movie and kind of just geek out over whatever we want. And Hannah usually geeks out about a lot of like the technical side of things. And I will geek out about the social side. And then we'll have a guest on who's an expert in the field. So it depends on like maybe we'll have sometimes we have the director of the film on and sometimes we'll have like we had for a 50 Shades of Grey episode, we had a social psychologist who is also like a passionate STI testing advocate. So yeah, stuff like that. And we started during quarantine and now we're out for people to listen.
Nice. I love movies and I like talking about movies and I'm glad. And like something like your podcast is so interesting because like I'm not a 50 Shades of Grey fan. But I would love to hear that perspective, you know, like I would love to hear the perspective of like a psychologist.
That's yeah, it was cool. definitely our first hate watch.
It's just not for me. I don't know.
it shouldn't be for anyone. Yeah. It's a horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't aren't getting the right idea across if we want as far as like sex and safe sex and consent and BDSM or whatever. But you know, we talk about it on the pod with an expert who can speak to that a little better than I can.
And I think the balance of like your co-host being really into the technical stuff and you being kind of into the more emotional kind of side of things or the societal side of things, I think it's a great balance. And also starting a podcast in quarantine, perfect endeavor. Like now's the time. Like we're all at home. We can record ourselves. And I think that's why so many podcasts came out in this past year is because we needed something to do. Like it gave us like a schedule, something to like to do it on. And I think podcasts are this evolving medium that always fascinate me.
Yeah, same. And like I think I started listening to your guys' podcasts like early quarantine.
Mm.
And I love it. I'm always looking for podcasts that I just want to hear someone talk about their experience and find what is relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is more relatable than a bunch of people of color talking about their experience with their family and career and entertainment. So
yeah, you're the perfect audience member for us. I always feel weird when someone starts at the beginning of our show because it's changed so much. Because the first third or even half of the episodes were kind of news-based, like topical news-based.
I'd say it's more than a third. Like, it was like 3/4 of our show was.
Oh, that's true. We just did that. We started late last year, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you're right. But yeah, and now since late last year being 2019, because I haven't, I'm not in 2021 yet.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, we converted completely to doing mostly guest interviews and the occasional news segment here and there or like a Q&A thing here and there. So whenever someone starts our podcast, I'm always kind of nervous to be like, well, what if they like this a lot better? And then it's going to change on them. And then whatever.
Well, I've listened to both. Mm-hmm. Like I listen to the news stuff too, because I'm like, I don't know what the hell is going on in this part of the world. I'm trying so hard to understand, but it's so complex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is kind of like where I would get my start for that kind of
dialogue
research, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, I would love to dip our toes into the occasional news story here and there, because I feel like you're right. Like, I think a huge part of that was because of Western media not covering it well or even at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, obviously, that's still the case. You know, it's,
It still sucks.
It really does. It's very emotional. It was emotionally draining to do that, to be that person, especially like talking about the Syrian war or like what's happening in Iran. I think both of us also just being like regular people, like not historians or anything or researchers. We're just trying to do our best.
Yeah. And it being so like literally a part of you. Mm-hmm. So it's like if people have questions, I don't know, you know, it's like, it is really emotionally draining to be the voice of
an entire people or religion or culture. Yeah. But I'm not opposed to doing it more. I just think like sometimes guests are just really fun to talk to. Like you said, like it's so nice to like realize that we're more alike than different, even if we're different kinds of immigrants or anything really. That's what really surprises me every time we have a guest out. I'm just like, there's so many similarities regardless of your upbringing or your ethnicity. It kind of blows my mind.
Yeah. Speaking of guests, my friend Eric Owusu just told me that he was on your pod.
Yeah.
He's like, have you heard of this podcast? I'm like, yes.
Nice. I haven't met him in person either, but he's really funny and really great. And I'm really glad I met him during this past year.
Yeah, he's great.
It's weird to me that anyone listens to this show.
Yeah.
I like don't have any, like every time someone's like, I listen to your show. And I'm like,
Liar.
Like what show are you referring to? I don't know. I feel like this show has become so much of my like schedule. Like it's like, okay. And then I do this and then I do that. And then I record Ethnically Ambiguous and then I go do that. And then I go do this. And it's like, because I work at iHeart, like it's just like part of the job, just doing my work. Woo-hoo! And, and then someone's like, I love your podcast. And I'm like, I don't know what you're referring to.
Right.
I'm not a podcaster. Yeah. I just work at a podcast network.
I've said so many things on this podcast and every podcast I guest on, like, I just, every time someone says that, I'm like, what do they know about me? Like, how much I, and then I don't remember what I've said. I just, I completely forget every interaction I've had when I record. And so when someone says like, oh, I love your show, I've listened to your podcast, I'm like, yikes, what version of me did you get? Yeah. What did I share? I don't know.
I do assume someone might think I'm like a fucking monster because like I sometimes go hard in what I joke about on this show and I want to be like, well, you know, I'm just like, I'm really turning it on for the show. I'm not really a monster. I swear to God, I'm a monster. But like deep down, I know I am. So it's like, maybe they are actually seeing my true self and it's for the best that they know that I'm like a trash monster who will make inappropriate jokes and then be like, what? Me? No. So.
Okay. Now you guys know. You're a trash monster, first of all. If anything, Oscar the Grouch is my favorite character right after Cookie Monster because I just relate to Cookie Monster's void.
Love for cookies. Yeah,
quest for cookies and the black hole within his stomach that he ceases to fill up. But Grouch, Oscar the Grouch, he's amazing. So if you are a trash monster, you're that. But you're not.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know you that well, but I agree. And I'm also the Cookie Monster.
I'm the Cookie Monster.
No, I am. What if we get into the huge fight on this podcast and then we just...
Who's the Cookie Monster? And yeah,
we all
just
never
end.
Speak again.
Yeah.
I have
a Cookie Monster onesie that I wore as a very lazy Halloween costume one year. And it had like this Velcro cookie that you put like in this pocket on your chest.
Cookies? Isn't that kind of what he sounds like?
It's so silly. But anyway.
All right. The cookie talk got me distracted.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll be right back after these cookies.
After these cookies.
We're back. We've all eaten cookies.
I wish.
Just kidding. Movie
cookies
magic.
Cookies are my favorite food, I think. Cookies, French fries.
Oh, same.
Okay. I literally said this out loud yesterday when my friend gave me a cookie. I said, nothing on this earth makes me happier than a cookie.
You're a smart gal.
And then I thought about it and I was like, I wasn't even joking when I said nope. that. I meant it. And I was truly so happy.
Yeah.
Same. I love cookies. I love French fries. I love everything I really had to cut out of my diet because I'm a garbage monster. I can't stop. I love anything that's like sweet and then like salty. Then I'm like sweet and then salty. And then I truly actually had to stop eating it because my doctor's like, you know you're going to kill yourself, right? And I was like, fine.
Yeah. I have a huge sweet tooth, but also I'm obsessed with fries. But cookies fries. Are my favorite food on the planet. Like a warm, like chocolate chip cookie. And I'm a weirdo. Like I like ones that don't have a lot of, are sparse with the chocolate. Like, I like that doughiness.
Oh, interesting.
Like, my sister and I always got into arguments about this, my older sister, because she really likes all the chips. And I like a good amount, but I also like the chipless parts, you know? Like, I like that dough taste. Cookie dough is another thing I would eat all the time as a kid. My mom, for a hot second when I was in middle school, she was a lunch lady. Because she wanted to make some money and she wanted to be like close to us and stuff. And at first it like embarrassed me because I was like in sixth grade, seventh grade. I was trying to figure
out. But you got
out.
Free cookies.
Yes. And then.
And the school lunch cookies were good.
Yes. So then every day, literally, she would give me French fries and cookies.
Hell
every
yeah.
day. That was like my lunch for 3 years. And
you have such a good mom.
Such a good mom. She would give my friends free cookies. So it started to be this like, Shireen's mom, like, let's get a cookie. And so I remember that so warmly and
I remember one time, like, speaking of just being kind of embarrassed about like our mom's jobs, my mom came into LeMay Elementary School as a Spanish teacher, and like she has no credentials in teaching, she just speaks Spanish, and I guess the school was like, okay. And I remember she came in and she would play this song that was in Spanish, and and the kids really loved the song, so all she did was play the song on repeat. And I think that was, like, she only did that for a short amount of time. But shout out to our moms.
Yeah, shout out to our moms. They're the best. I always feel a little annoyed. I mean, I know it's common to be embarrassed of your moms or dads when you're a child, but I'm really glad that I got out of that pretty quick, because it's like, you don't want to judge them the same way Americans already judge them, you know? You don't want, like, yeah, they have accents, but they're amazing accents, you know? Like, I love the way they speak.
That's wild. No one ever knew I had a mom for a long time, because no one ever saw my mom. My mom was like a mystery person, because she only really worked on her career. And then they always just saw my dad. And my dad was just like so cranky all the time, because he's an old Persian man. I guess at the time he was younger, but still like a Persian man who's like, ah, just like crabby. And I remember like always being like, I have a mom.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, prove it.
Because everyone's moms would always take them to and from school. But it was like my dad, because like he was just like around more to like take us and pick us up and just like take us around. And I mean, like I did like daycare and all that, but like it was always my dad that picked us up, because my mom's a ballin' career woman who does not call me back. But I don't have issues over it, okay? I dealt with it in therapy, okay?
You seem very fine. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I definitely still have issues over it. She still hasn't texted me back trying to confirm if she's gotten vaccinated or not. But of course, she doesn't have time to let me know. My dad did, though. My dad's got both shots. So, woo!
Yay!
Nice.
Mom, we may never know.
Who knows? Yeah.
We may never
but
know.
But I always felt like really sad when people like had their mom. Like when moms would like volunteer for stuff, I'd be like, wow, must be nice.
I was always kind of, well, maybe it saved you from like a very specific kind of anxiety of like feeling the need to protect your mom from like evil white ladies,
yes,
at elementary school. Because I specifically remember being in Girl Scouts and having like the feeling of eyes on my, like just feeling othered immediately. And my mom, because she's always been this like very eccentric, like loud and very like vibrant person, she would get side-eyed from other moms. And I just felt weird about, like, I remember feeling awkward about it and like feeling bad and like wanting to protect her. And
yeah, I definitely relate. Once I quickly got over caring that my mom was a lunch lady, I would get really protective if anyone made fun of that.
Yeah.
If anyone like made fun of me, I was just like, fuck you. Like, who cares? And there was also several years when I was a kid and a preteen that she had her hair covered. She was wearing she never wore a hijab, but she would wear like this cap on her head to cover her hair. Like sometimes she would wear a bandana, but the point was to cover her hair for religious reasons. And then 9/11 happened. And every time my mom was in public or even just around white people, and I was so acutely aware of the look she got, I was so terrified and afraid. And San Diego is really not as blue as you would like to believe. It has pretty, like...
You grew up in San Diego?
Yeah, mostly in San Diego. We moved around a couple of times, but for the most part, San Diego.
San Diego's pretty, like, military. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're all, like, lifted trucks.
Yeah, so that scared me a lot. And
Sandy bros.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you're right. I didn't have that same feeling towards my dad, because I just spent so much more time with my mom. And also it was just more obvious because of her headscarf or her head covering. And then her accent also made it kind of obvious when she would talk. And I was just so protective of that. And I don't know. I just have a lot of appreciation for our parents. And especially when you're an adult and you can like look at it more maturely and just see like how much they had to do, especially immigrating, like starting from that, like I can't even imagine doing that. I can't imagine just like going to a country where I don't know the language very well and just starting
don't know
over.
Anyone
yeah
have like no money. Mm-hmm. I recently have had like, I mean, I've always been like appreciative of my parents, but like I really appreciated it in a whole new way. Like I went crying to my friend the other day just because I was thinking about my parents, and I was like, damn, they really did try so hard for me to be able to just move to another place and do what I want. Mm-hmm. Essentially.
Yeah.
And now I don't even like correcting their English,
because
when I was younger I would kind of help them with like I still occasionally will help my dad with emails. I'm like, just there's a plugin called Grammarly that's really helpful. But my parents the other day, they have a pug named Ozzy, and he's like a really chubby black pug, super cute. His tongue like hangs out of his mouth really far.
Yeah.
And the dog was humping this pillow, like he wouldn't stop humping a pillow. And my dad was so upset. Like, it was really upsetting for my dad, which is hilarious that he was upset, like, shaming it as if he, like, as if that dog is going to go to hell for masturbating or something. Yeah. And he's like, the dog won't stop bumping the pillow. It won't stop bumping the pillow. I couldn't correct it.
Yeah. Bumping.
Because he meant to say humping, but it was so cute.
So endearing. Yeah.
Bumping.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I was always, I've always wanted my mom around. But then, like, the more as I got older, I was like, that's, like, actually pretty cool that she, like, came from Iran, got married, had kids, and then was just like, okay, well, I'm going to focus on my career because that's what I care about. And, like, that's what I've always wanted to do when I came to this country and I worked really hard to get here. So I'm going to actually build my career up and I'm not going to feel bad about it. It was, like, always very interesting. So I'm like, oh, yeah, she was, like, a real career woman. Mm-hmm. Like, she was she was pantsuit nation before it became a girl boss, you know, like, white feminism thing. Like, she did that first. Like, she worked in San Francisco and would, like, you know, work in the city, commute home to the suburbs.
What does she do?
She's an electrical engineer.
That's badass. Very cool.
Yeah, she's a badass.
Now she's a little, like, past, you know, in her career. She still works, but she's, like, you know, a higher up. But she used to, when she was, like, first building her career, she basically, like, designed CCTV, like, cameras. I mean, she was basically, like, building surveillance equipment for the state as a Muslim woman,
I was about to make a joke, like, well, what if your mom secretly works for the government? She has to lie about who she is, and that's why you didn't see her that much, because she was living a double life.
Her company does contracts for the government. They basically build spyware, basically. She's an electrical engineer. They build cameras. She was part of the, like, big CCTV boom, basically. But now they do, like, you know, traffic shit. It's all, like, traffic, catching you running a red light, you know, catching people doing shady shit all the time. And I always thought it was funny because she's, like, a devout Muslim woman who prays 5 times a day. And it's, like, people want to hate on Muslims. And it's, like, hey, you know, these are, like, these Iranian or whatever, just, like, Middle Eastern people are, like, the smartest people. And also building the tech to help you keep you safe while you're out here, like, bashing them on the streets and, you know, committing Islamophobic crimes and hate crimes against these people. And they're, like, my mom literally hand draws schematics for a camera. She could be, like, this is a camera. What you're looking at, all these lines I just drew out myself because I understand tech that deeply. That's a camera that's going to take a photo of you if you run a red light. And it's like, yeah, that's fucking tight. She's so cool. And then, you know, she gets hated on because she is from Iran and is a Muslim woman who prays 5 times a day and is very devout and leaves work every Friday to go to Quran study with her girls. Hey. Her Muslim ladies, what's up? Quran study. And then says really terrifying things like, God's watching to me. When I was a teenager, like, sneaking out, like, uh-oh. Take it up with God, what he sees me doing. drinking, underage drinking. But yeah, I mean, like, I just think it's like, she didn't conform to, like, what it is to be, like, this Middle Eastern mom. Or, like, even just, like, in Iran, like, the moms are all, like, your job is to be a mom. And she was, like, no, I made it here. I learned the language. I got the job. Because my mom also went to college here. She moved here, went to college, and learned English to get her, like, degrees. And it's, like, that's pretty cool that she was just, like, fuck it. I'm doing it. Now that I'm here and I've gotten this far, like, I'm not going to take a step back. I'm actually going to keep working.
Hell yeah.
And she's more high tech to me. Like, when she works from home and has, like, 3 computers or whatever that she works from. And it's like, she knew about 2-factor authentication before I did. Like, she's just, like, on her shit. It's pretty cool, man. Parents are cool in retrospect. But then when you're young, you're like, you're embarrassing me.
We all go through those angsty little phases. But yeah, if you're able to, especially with you, Sherilyn, I'm sure the distance feels so much bigger with everything that's going on. But if you're out there and you're able to hug your parents, please do. If you're able to FaceTime them, please do. And just have, like, I don't know, appreciate them while they're here, if they're here. And if they're not here, appreciate them for everything that they've instilled in you. You know, I just think they're endlessly figures to be grateful for. Acknowledging that not every parent is a good parent. So the ones that are good.
And maybe they're just not texting you back.
Yeah, you can say thanks, or you don't have to say thanks for the trauma, but you could acknowledge the trauma and say, thanks for raising me, even though you have trauma that you passed down to me.
Exactly. I you definitely can acknowledge relate to that.
Generational trauma.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we could talk to you for another hour, another 2 hours. I feel like we barely scratched the surface, but it has been so lovely getting to know you better. And you're just a delight to talk to. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks. You guys are great too.
Thanks.
And also, you guys should come on my podcast and talk about movies.
Love. Yeah. I would love to.
I've never seen a movie, but I'm willing to start.
You should check them out. There's so many.
A movie. Okay. I'll look into
there are
it.
A lot of them.
Movie.
But yeah, that would be a dream come true. I love talking about movies. But until then, can you please tell our audience where they can find you online if you want to be found?
Yeah. So you could find me on Instagram at Sherilyn Vera. I guess I'll spell that. That's maybe not easy to spell. Sharilyn_Vera. And you can watch my documentary at boricuathedoc.com, BORICUA.
We'll also link it in the description so people can easily find it.
Cool. Oh, and listen to the podcast. We Live in a Film Society, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Yeah.
We'll link that bad boy as well.
Yeah. You're doing so many cool things. I just can't wait to follow you along as you continue to make cool things. So I feel privileged for that. But yeah, before I get too savvy,
she's
I'm
going
to wrap this out of here. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosnay on Twitter.
And go follow Sherilyn, listen to her podcast, watch her documentary, and you won't regret it.
You won't regret it.
Until next time, stay eating cookies.
Eat those cookies, everyone.
Eat those cookies.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.